boot up again here. Sorry for the interruption. I'll just go ahead and get started if that's okay, and we can catch up. My name is Chuck Curtis. I'm on staff here with the regional board in the South Lake Tahoe office. I'm the manager of the Planning and Toxics Division, which includes the TMDL unit, and basin planning activities are also done in my division. We're here to discuss the recommendations to the State Board for an update of our 303D list. The 303D list update is required by the Clean Water Act. It affects surface waters of the U.S., and every 2 years we're supposed to update this list. Now, our last list update was actually in 1998. Because the EPA was undergoing a rule revision in 2000, they waived our need to update the list at that time, so here we are planning the update here for 2002. Update of the 303D list includes identifying those water bodies that are impaired, that don't meet our standards, that are on our list that we feel we should delist. And something that we've done this year that's not actually 303D list, but we've created a watch list for those water bodies that we feel that we want to take a closer look at and get additional data to evaluate whether those should be on the list. The process is, in March, we solicited information on our water bodies here in our region. We reviewed that data, put together a draft recommendations that was available in late November, and then we're here at the regional board to have you consider the staff's recommendations, comments by the public, and then adopt a resolution recommending to the State Board to consider this list update. Now, from here, the State Board is the one that actually makes the action with another complete round of public hearings to adopt the list, and then they pass that on to EPA for adoption. In general, our considerations for listing or delisting water bodies are if they're meeting our water quality standards or not, or if beneficial uses are impaired. In doing this, we look at the quality and quantity of the data. We delist water bodies if we had data that turned out to be erroneous or faulty assumptions were associated with that data, or if water bodies have been restored and are now meeting our water quality standards. We're also proposing to delist quite a few water bodies that where we feel that the impairments are wholly natural, and therefore by our interpretation of the Clean Water Act, they're not pollutants because they are fully natural. Our approach is a weight of evidence approach, which includes looking at the data, other information associated with the water body that would lead us to reasonable conclusion that the water body is indeed impaired and not meeting our standards. You've had a chance to review the package that includes our recommendations. In general, we're recommending to add 42 water body pollutant combinations. I say the water body pollutant combinations because some water bodies may have more than one pollutant. And so one water body with two pollutants would be two water body pollutant combinations. We're also planning to remove 29 water bodies, retaining 69 that are on our current list, which will total a new list of 111 water bodies on our 303D list. It's an increase of about 12 to 15% over what our current 303D list is. For several of our listings, we're clarifying the nature of the impairment, being more specific, actually. Where we have listed in the past a water body for nutrients, here we're clarifying what the particular nutrients of concern are here that are not meeting their water quality standards. That's an example. Metals are another one where we specify particular metals that may be the problem. This table shows a summary of by watershed where we're delisting, adding, or retaining water bodies. With our total 303 delist recommendation for 2002, adding up to 111 water bodies or water body pollutant combinations. As I mentioned, we also have developed a watch list. It's not an official 303D or EPA list at all. It's more a document for staff to be aware of when we're determining where to put our monitoring resources or to pay more attention to these water bodies to determine whether they are impaired or not. And so we've added quite a number of water bodies to this this list here, which is new. It's a new list for us. New EPA regulations, which have not been passed, but they're kind of in the works, identifies a watch list as one of the probable outcomes of these new EPA regulations. In addition to identifying water bodies that are impaired or not meeting our standards, we are to identify priorities for developing TMDLs for those water bodies. And those priorities are ranked in gross categories of high, medium, and low. As you can see, we have quite a few high priorities here on our list, and that's primarily a result of our high of water bodies being of very high importance here in the region, either critical watershed or have very high resource values, these sorts of things. Many of our water bodies that we've identified as low priorities, those include water bodies that are impaired by natural, that are impaired by things such as flow or habitat impairments. With the flow or habitat impairment, we cannot identify a pollutant and therefore a loading of a pollutant, so you cannot develop a TMDL for it. So these are water bodies that are really low priority from the TMDL standpoint because there's no way you can develop a TMDL for it. But there are or may be other management methods where the impairment can be removed by other methods other than TMDLs. Along with the priorities, we develop schedules for completing these TMDLs. Our 1998 list, we were essentially required to develop a schedule that showed completion of those that were listed in 98 by 2011. For most of these newly listed water bodies that we're adding to the list, we're saying we'll deal with those 2015 or sometime after that. So there are some instances where because we're already dealing with that water body with another pollutant impairment where that schedule may be moved up to incorporate the work that we're already doing on an existing listing. But for the most part, new listings, because we just don't have the resources to all of a sudden jump on these new listings, those have been put off for quite some time. Looking at 303D list and thinking about doing TMDLs for our impaired water bodies brings us to seriously look at our water quality standards. The water quality standards and beneficial uses are the basis for our identifying these as impaired. Now, there may be instances where our water quality standards may not be appropriate. I believe we have instances where both water quality standards are not restrictive enough to protect our beneficial uses in some instances, and in other instances, the water quality standards are really not appropriate. They are actually too restrictive. They were made on based on limited data or on data that probably does not reflect the background natural condition of the water body. So before, when we have some of these water bodies where this is an issue, there have been many public comments on this issue, and in certain instances, we've identified in the staff report and in the listing that standards are probably appropriate to be revised in some of these cases. There is a drive from EPA for the state to develop nutrient criteria for our water bodies, and this the outcome of that may also result in revised standards for some of our water bodies. In all, we received about a little over 20 comment letters by the end of our comment period, December 28th, addressing the listing issue. Some of them do not have specific comments on our listing, but addressed other issues. But I'll go through, kind of summarize what some of the primary comments were that we received. I'll go by watershed by watershed. In the Lake Tahoe watershed, we received comments primarily about the appropriateness of our iron standard. And staff realizes that our iron standard is one of those where we probably should revise it. It's one that is not really reflective of background conditions, natural conditions, and is not coincident with protection of a beneficial use. So we think that's one that is ripe for revision. So we've received a couple of different comments on that one.
Chuck, is the issue on iron that our standard is too high and that...
Our standard is too low.
Too low.
Yes. The standard, we haven't researched really exactly where the standard, what the basis of the standard was when the regional board developed the standard, but we believe that it was a result of a drinking water, tap water issue that is probably not appropriate here in the Lake Tahoe Basin to reflect natural conditions. There naturally is quite a bit of iron here in the surface waters here and in groundwater. And so that water quality standard is probably inappropriate. And so that's one that we probably should revise. And certainly before we would start any efforts down the line towards working on a TMDL, it doesn't make any sense to put any of our resources in that direction. It makes sense to put those resources into revising the standard because I think we feel pretty sure that that standard is really not appropriate.
If your standards, you say, are low today, but you're listing these different tributaries,
yes,
then you're going to be playing with another set of rules down the road a ways after you list them. Is that right?
Well, we're required by federal law to list those waters that don't meet our standards. The regional board, way back when, approved these standards. They said, okay, these are the standards for the Lahontan region and for this watershed or hydrologic unit specifically. Federal law requires us to identify those waters that are not meeting our standards, put them on the 303D list, and develop and identify priorities for it and a schedule for doing TMDLs.
But they don't prepare for any funds for you to do this, do they? Under the federal guidelines that say you have to get all of these watersheds into compliance, there's no funds for it, then you've got them listed and nothing happens to it.
We do receive actually quite a bit of funding to evaluate our waters and to develop plans to restore those waters to conditions that meet our standards. Here in the last several years, not only the TMDL program, which now receives very considerable amount of state funding as well as federal funding, but also our ambient surface water ambient monitoring program now has significant funding to evaluate the condition of our waters. And so that we now do have quite a few resources to address these waters that we have identified as impaired. But in the case of a water body where we feel that the standard is not appropriate, we will put efforts to revise that standard to make it what we feel is appropriate to protect the beneficial uses and to not allow degradation of that water body. And as a result of that, we would reevaluate whether the water body meets the new standard. If it meets the new standard, then we would delist that water body.
Hence, they do not meet the old standards.
In the case of the Lake Tahoe watershed, with those water bodies that we're identifying as adding to the list for iron, they definitely do not meet the standard, the current standard, our basin plan standard.
Chuck, if I could also just add to that, there's also money available for stakeholders in the watershed that need to make improvements with their facilities, either through 205 or 319 grants or Prop 13 grants. So while it doesn't cover everybody, and it's obviously not enough money to fix all of the problems statewide, there is money available to do that, and the priority for a lot of that money is going into sites where a TMDL has been adopted, and there is a plan in place to do those fixes in the watershed. So there is some money. Again, I don't want to indicate that there's money for everybody, but there is some money out there to help stakeholders meet the implementation goals of these TMDLs.
Right, and for those situations where we feel that yes, there's definitely an impairment here. Having a water body on the 303D list is one of the criteria that is identified for appropriation of a lot of that funding. Prop 13 funding, if the water body is the 303D listed water body, certainly that has a priority over a water body that is not listed like that. In the, I'll move on to the Carson Walker, or the Carson Watershed, unless there are any other questions here. In the Carson River Watershed, we received quite a number of comments from Alpine County, from the Carson Subconservancy District, and the South Tahoe Public Utility District, and others. That are summarized here on this slide here, including the standards may not be appropriate, the amount of data may not be appropriate to list the water body. I'll summarize our comments to all of these kind of here at the end. I'll move on through some of the other comments. In the Owens River watershed, the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power opposes our continued listing of a couple of water bodies there. One of the issues that they have is the contention that these water bodies are not waters of the U.S. And we can't solve that issue here in this forum. The water bodies do not meet our standards, and until those water bodies are identified as not being a water of the U.S., it's appropriate to list them on the 303D list, we feel. At Searles Lake, similarly, the primary stakeholder there, IMC Chemicals, also has brought up the comment that they don't feel that this is a water of the U.S. And so that's an issue that down the line here someplace that will have to be addressed. But it's this board doesn't make that decision, so we won't really go into that here.
Madam Chair, what we're saying is we're going to list them, then you prove they're not. Is that what you're saying?
Sure, you bet. We feel that the water is a water of the U.S. We don't feel that it's only a water of the state, that it's not a water of the U.S. We feel it is a water of the U.S. It doesn't meet the standards, so it's appropriate for putting on the list. Now, if a court or another body that has authority to make that decision decides that it's not a water body of the U.S., then it would be removed from the 303D list because it's only for waters of the U.S. In our staff report associated with, or our fact sheets associated with Searles Lake, we'd identified that bird kills were associated with petroleum releases there. Information that the dischargers provided refutes that contention, so we've removed that in our errata sheet that you have. We've identified additional or modified language for that fact sheet that removes that contention. But the water body still doesn't meet our water quality standards. There's petroleum discharges such that there's sheen, there's impact to the beneficial uses there. So staff feels it's appropriate to list the water body. In the Mojave River, we received quite a number of comments, including from Board Member Betterly. And this is a water body that we have reconsidered placing that on the 303D list. And the reason that staff is recommending removing that from the list and putting that on the watch list instead is because of the very small number of samples under which that proposal was made. So we'll put that water body on the watch list, and as additional data is collected, we can evaluate whether that water body is appropriate for listing or not. But at this time, and as identified in the errata or late revision sheet there, that change has been made.
Madam Chair, I would be in the hopes that on these others that they are putting, that they have more data than what they had to start with on the Mojave.
I can assure you that they are,
that was,
sir.
The goal.
In general, our response to comments, in particularly with regard to standard, is the appropriateness of the standards is that these comments are going to be considered, and we're definitely going to be looking at the standards, especially those where commenters have indicated that these standards may not be appropriate. So we will be looking at these standards for revision in our basin plan. So I would expect here, sometime here in the not too distant future, we will probably start bringing to the board for consideration amendments to our basin plan standards for some of these water bodies or standards that are associated with them.
Chuck, one quick question.
Yes.
If something is listed, do you have to wait? You can delist it at any time once, or do you have to wait in the first 2 years?
It only happens every 2 years, but we can essentially stop any work that would likely be going forward if it were a listed water body. For example, if we had begun doing work towards a TMDL or something like that, of course we would stop that work because it wouldn't be appropriate to put those resources to that end. But we if it's either if the standards are modified such that it meets the standards, or if, for example, a water body is identified legally as no longer considered a water body of the U.S., we could certainly identify to the EPA and the State Board that this water body or these water bodies are no longer appropriate to be on the list, and at the next update, we will be removing them.
Thank you.
It still takes 2 years.
That's right. I've indicated these changes here in addition for Searles and for the Mojave River as a result of public comments and review of the data. So in summary, staff is recommending that the board adopt the resolution recommending this modified list which includes the removal of the Mojave River, to recommend to the state board to adopt this list for the Lahontan region. Any questions?
Where are we going to wind up with Searles Lake? I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk between staff and IMCC, and I guess I was a little surprised to see that there doesn't seem to be any movement in. We had talked about delisting things and
there is movement to modify the basin plan, and staff is looking into designating specific beneficial uses for parts of the lake.
Right.
And so those amendments on the beneficial uses and designating what's part of the lake and what's not, that sort of thing, may result in this listing no longer being appropriate.
Is Searles high on our priority list, or is it low? You know, you have three different categories. Which one does it fit into?
Frankly, I don't recall. but it is in your table
I think
one.
It would be low.
It is in table one at the bottom of your near the bottom of that table one.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chuck.
While we're talking, excuse me, you may go next.
If I could expand on Eric's question, when do you think the staff will be able to get back to the board as to the termination on the beneficial uses?
I may be in a better position to answer this than Chuck.
You are.
We actually have a draft of a scoping document for the functional equivalent document that would be necessary as part of our basin plan amendment that's undergoing internal review right now and should be out on the streets pretty soon. And that will start the process. We're a little late in doing it. We would have liked to have gotten it out last month, actually. But I think we've got about a, Hassam, 12 months. Is that what we're talking about? Hassam? About 12 months. Once we start the process and actually start the public process, which will begin shortly, it's about a 12-month process to actually get it to the board for ultimate decision making. So, yes, there'd be a length. There'd be public comment periods, and it would be a public hearing by the board.
So it'll be our next 303 update where we delist it or change it. It'll be then.
If in fact that's correct. If in fact that your decisions with the basin plan amendment result in.
Change.
No longer
yep.
the need to list
yep.
it,
okay.
it would be the next listing cycle that we would remove it from the list.
So we'll get this draft document then within a month, is that what you're saying?
We have a scoping document going out, which is not the actual basin plan amendment language, but sort of a general document that describes what we intend to put forward to the board and a description of what we think the potential environmental effects are of that potential decision. And we circulate that and get comments back. And then that results in the development of the functional equivalent document and the actual basin plan language.
Well, will we get the scoping document within a month?
Repeat the question.
Yes, yes. Okay. You should be getting it within about a month, yeah.
Still on Searles. I'd been waiting and wondering what the necropsy results were going to show. Mm-hmm. And in reading them, I didn't see anything that eliminated hydrocarbons as a contributory factor to bird deaths. What I saw, in fact, was hydrocarbons having been ingested by at least one bird, and I didn't really count it because I didn't know that you were going to take this particular thing off. But it seems to me that those results don't prove that the hydrocarbons are not at least partially responsible. And certainly, immune suppression, complications of neuromuscular function could certainly be the result of ingestion of feathers coated with kerosene.
Certainly. Yeah, I too feel that petroleum hydrocarbons may be a contributing factor to those birds' death. The necropsies do not identify petroleum hydrocarbons as being the cause of death or even contributing, being a partial cause. Mm-hmm. For that reason, we've removed reference to that. But I agree with you, Chair, that petroleum hydrocarbons may be a contributing factor.
Well, I mean, I think we have a reverse opinion here. We have veterinarians who did the necropsies and presented us with the results. But were they asked specifically if hydrocarbons were involved?
I don't know.
Okay. Leaving Searles Lake listed for hydrocarbons, but eliminating the language about bird deaths. I don't think it has the same intent.
Well, one thing that I can say there is the situation is so much better than it used to be. There was a significant problem with birds being coated with oil, and whether that caused or contributed to their deaths, perhaps the jury's out on that. But there are other water quality standards that are being violated there with the petroleum hydrocarbons there. And we have no doubt that those standards are being violated, and it's appropriate to list the water body as impaired because of those standards not being met.
Well, if it gets us to the same place.
I think it will.
Okay.
It's close, B, but not quite there, but I think it's all right.
This far away.
I would, if I could, I'd... John?
Well, just why would you rank it as a low priority?
No, John didn't get to go.
Well, it seems to take up a lot of the time of this board. So
John, I believe a good answer to that is because there's a lot of work going on there. We've had a lot of discussions here with the board. We've had orders. They're under orders to do work there. The situation is much better. So we feel that because of ongoing efforts to deal with that problem, to try to solve that problem, that it doesn't warrant a high ranking. In addition to, as the comment was made about the resource value there, it certainly is a resource value for wildlife, for waterfowl resting there. It's not a habitat where birds stay there because the concentrations of salts are just so high that it's not good for them.
Chuck, if I could just add to that real briefly too, is just because you have a water body that's on a 303D list does not take a TMDL to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we want to look at internally is, can we solve problems in these watersheds using other vehicles than a TMDL? In other words, can we use our existing regulatory tools, be they permits, be they non-point source controls, well before we have to develop a TMDL that actually might result in improved water quality such that we could delist it without ever doing a TMDL? And I personally think that there's a lot of effective communication and coordination and regulatory push to IMC that they are doing things along with a potential basin plan amendment that may in fact result in the delisting of this water body and the improved water quality of this water body.
It's hard to imagine a TMDL for Searles Lake, isn't it?
Yes.
What it looks like.
So I think that, I think from that perspective is that we have many other water bodies where we have problems and things aren't being done by anybody under any kind of regulatory scheme. And I think those may more likely justify a TMDL to get the ball rolling.
Chuck, I'm a little confused on this bird death issue. Fish and Game came before us, and they swore up and down these hydrocarbons were killing birds. And didn't they reference some necropsy reports? And then these most recent necropsy reports indicate that oil wasn't a factor or contributing factor, and yet I think we all have suspicion, like B points out, that it could be. And where are we now, and is there anything that's going to be done in the future to put this issue to rest? Is there going to be any more testing, or they find any more dead birds, or they're going to see if they can find oil in them or anything like that? Or,
well, certainly we're trying to resolve that conflicting story there between what the Fish and Game came before the board here about a year ago and said that they found oil in the internal organs of these birds that they had evaluated and that it likely contributed or caused their death. So we're trying to get that story, that conflict resolved with these necropsies. We have asked Fish and Game for the information that backs up the statements that they made here, and we have not received that yet.
How long ago have you asked them for that?
Time ago? I don't know the answer to that because the Victorville staff is following up on that, and I don't.
Maybe, let me see if I can help on this one a bit, because this is not only a complex issue, but it's also a pretty enforcement-sensitive issue, in that other agencies are also looking to enforce their regulations against IMC for things that they allege at this point. And I don't believe that this is the appropriate forum, frankly, to get into interpreting these necropsy results. And given the fact that there is considerable debate over what they mean, and maybe even looking at all of them at this point that we don't have in front of us, and I think one of the criteria you gave us that said use good data to propose listings to you, I would strongly urge you, I guess, at this point to leave that for a different forum on the necropsy results, because it is a subject of considerable debate, and I know it is being looked at very closely in other forums.
Yeah, I would just like some assurance that that is being pursued.
It is.
That's the only thing I'm after.
It is, yes.
Well, then I just want to add that I think we have taken a step based upon an interpretation of this data which is inappropriate. If we still believe that hydrocarbons contribute to their deaths, then I think it should be in the narrative on Searles Lake, because the necropsy reports neither confirm nor disprove that involvement.
I don't really disagree with you, but maybe a little bit. I think that we are listing it for hydrocarbons, so that is, it's listed. That the hydrocarbons, there is, it's on there. So once this debate comes to some fruition where we have good science and facts, this is what they died of, it's listed for hydrocarbons. That adding those words, I really don't feel makes much difference to the listing itself.
It previously did have bird deaths as part of its listing in the last list?
It was not listed
or
for petroleum hydrocarbons.
In the last listing?
Correct. It was listed for
bird
results.
Deaths mentioned at all in the last listing?
No.
In the narrative?
No.
Okay.
It was listed for high
list.
Salts.
Yeah, yeah. What's that?
It was listed for TDS and salts, which those are natural, and so we're recommending it to
you
be delisted
those.
For those.
Right.
But listed for petroleum hydrocarbons.
And so is there a place where you can put bird deaths as part of the impairment? I mean, even if you wanted to, is it appropriate?
Certainly can be considered an impairment of habitat.
I would not disagree with you, but I don't know whether you would want to make the linkage with the pollutant, that is the hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no one can say that there have not been bird deaths on Searles Lake.
Okay.
And clearly that is, as you point out, an impairment of a beneficial use.
So actually, in a way, B, it seems like by listing it for hydrocarbons, we are getting closer to pointing at bird deaths than we were having enlisted previously for TDS and whatnot.
I agree with that.
So in some respects, we're actually closer to where you would like us to be with this version of the listing than we were in the last list.
Good point. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
John?
Chuck and Harold, maybe you can comment on this as a putting us back from Searles Lake and looking at the entire listing and delisting discussion. would it be just true to say that by focusing on the listed water bodies that they receive additional focus and perhaps more benefits and more resources are brought to bear to bring them into compliance of water quality?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So adding 42 and taking 26 off, we're hopefully getting to that day when we'll be taking 42 off and not adding any.
Yes. That's the clear goal.
If I may, Chair, we did receive one very late comment that I'll just mention here because I think it is relevant. We received a comment letter from Deirdre Flynn, who's associated with a ranching and here in the Lake Tahoe Basin. And she's disturbed that our identification of listing for Big Meadow Creek, amongst others, for pathogens, identifies cattle grazing as a likely source or primary source. We realize that there are other sources, and we've discussed this with the Forest Service, who owns most of those lands, that an identification of what the source of the fecal coliforms that we're seeing needs to be done. But we certainly, you know, here in the basin, there certainly has been a correlation with cattle grazing, the time of the year that they're here or when they're here versus when they're not here during seasons, that there is a correlation of fecal coliforms with their presence. But there certainly are other sources of coliforms here in the watershed. There are many recreational users that use these lands here in the Lake Tahoe Basin. With dogs, human waste, there's also much wildlife that is in these watersheds. And so in looking at the sources and doing any sort of a TMDL or other looking at other regulatory or other actions that we might to bring to bear to reduce the concentrations of fecal coliform in our waters, identifying the source of those impairments is certainly going to be first on the list.
Are we actually making an attribution for the source for this particular impairment?
We identify cattle grazing as one of the likely sources. Yes.
Do we make mention of any other possibilities?
Absolutely.
We do.
Yes.
In this listing.
Yes.
Okay. So we don't say it's only cattle grazing.
Right.
That,
right.
And that plus other things.
Right. But the ranchers feel that we are not considering other sources significantly enough, that we're too quick to point to cattle as the source of these.
Okay.
So,
Chuck, what is the season on grazing in this area?
It's quite short here. Probably Lori has a better handle on that than me, but it's typically been very short because of our long winters here.
October?
No, it's typically about July to October because it's these are high meadows, high elevation meadows, so they don't really dry out enough until July.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck, I'd like to just, if I could, just add one thing to what Chuck said, and it relates to the NPDS, the Waters of the U.S. issue that a number of commenters have raised, and the responsibility of this board to eventually determine whether water bodies are waters of the U.S. initially. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your decision could get petitioned up the line one way or the other, but I think the initial decision is going to have to be yours. We'd like to work on some language to incorporate into the staff report that would go with our proposal to the state board to address some of the concerns that have been expressed. And I think I want to talk with legal counsel real quick here before we make a recommendation to you, but I'd like to leave that open that we do plan on
next meeting.
No, actually today.
Oh, today.
Before you consider the item, it's just we'd like to add a sentence or so.
Oh, okay.
Just to address the concerns that have been expressed here and make sure that it's on the record in a way that the state.
But we're not going to make the decision about water.
Absolutely not.
Just add some language to say we're aware of it in
yes.
some way.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Are there comments about that or other questions about other things of Chuck?
I just have a question.
why, I thought the Army Corps of Engineers or somebody else was determining Oakland Water to the United States or something.
The way, and I, this is it's sort of a new issue to us, in fact, because of the Swank decision and other things, but the Army Corps of Engineers makes determinations of waters of the U.S. as it relates to their 404 jurisdiction.
Even the 1300.
And maybe 1300. But as it relates to the Clean Water Act and the 401 jurisdiction, which really has been delegated by U.S. EPA to the regional boards, the discussions that I've had with the U.S. EPA people, staff, have indicated that they would look to the regional board to make the initial call on that as to whether or not it was, because it is a delegated program to the state of California. So it really relates to the jurisdiction of the agency as to, you know, if it is a 404 request, it originally goes to them, and if they say it's not a water of the U.S., they're making that decision based on that application to them.
And the regional board makes that type of determination all the time when it decides whether to issue an NPDES permit or WDRs. Once you issue an NPDES permit, you've determined that there's an impact to a water of the United States or wouldn't be subject to NPDES at all. As far as adopting the 303D list, you actually are making a preliminary determination that these waters qualify as waters of the U.S. or they wouldn't be listed.
Before you get away, I need some help in understanding some of these impairments that are due to water diversions. You mentioned in the West Fort Carson that during dry years and because of agricultural diversions, there is a habitat impairment. And certainly on Owens Lake, there's a demonstrable, if that's a word, habitat loss because of water diversions since the 20s. Mm-hmm. How are...
We have waters on our list currently that are identified as impaired due to flow diversions or lack of flow because of diversions and or habitat impacts from flow diversions. As I indicated earlier, we can't do TMDLs for them because there's not a pollutant where we can calculate a load and identify a load reduction that would then bring the water body into compliance. As Harold indicated, there are some other we have other regulatory means to help bring those water bodies into compliance with meeting our beneficial uses, and you know those could be a non-point source. Now with flow, it's kind of tough, but for some of the others, there are other 319 programs that can assist in repairing a habitat damage. That on a water body where we can't do a TMDL for it. The TMDL is not the appropriate program to bring about a restoration of that water body. Another program may be, though.
You know, a good example, you know, where there is authority is at the State Water Board level, and it's been demonstrated at some of the tributaries to Mono Lake where the beneficial use basically of those tributaries was lost because of diversions. And the state board, through a decision that they adopted, you know, a few years ago, has required return flows to those tributaries, which then recreates the beneficial use. So there is other mechanisms where you've got flow diversions to look at in-stream uses.
And also recreate wetlands that the Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction of?
If it is considered to be a water of the U.S., yes, it would revert back.
Thank you.
Okay. Instead of being alphabetical, we're going geographically at this point. We have speaker cards from a number of people. Chris Gansberg from Alpine County, Board of Supervisors.
Madam Chairman, honorable board members, my name is Chris Gansberg. I'm on the Board of Supervisors of Alpine County, been on and off since 1982. I decided not to run those couple terms. But anyway, my comments today, Alpine County wrote you a letter. I'm sure I'm not going to read that, go through that whole letter. And you saw the comments on the Carson River, on the problems that we have right now. And that's why I'm talking to you tonight about I think it's extremely important your vote here tonight about putting the West Carson on the list. Mr. Betterly's comments about the Mojave, that's where we're coming from. We don't feel that there's enough data, enough monitoring to warrant putting that on the 303D list. I think it might be on the watch list, which I would recommend, but I really don't think it should be there. Because once it goes to the state, Chuck graciously came to our board, once the state gets the recommendations from you folks, you know, they're not going to change their mind because you're the regional body. And then once it goes from them to the feds, it's not going to be changed there. So whatever you do tonight, I think is extremely important. the other thing, item I wanted to bring up is I think staff and the board needs to know that a lot of these standards are not going to be set. They're not going to be met. I'm involved with a group in Bridgeport Valley with the streams coming in there, and they, Linda Vance, a gal from Davis, took some water samples coming off the glacial snowmelt above Twin Lakes, and those didn't even meet the water standards. Now, that doesn't make sense to me, but anyway, that's the way it is.
Didn't meet the water standards?
No, because I think the runoff, maybe Harold can address that.
I don't have the data in front of me, so yeah, I'd be hard to compare the data.
But I think you have the data available to you, though, right?
I can comment on that. Mm-hmm.
We do have that data from Linda Vance from UC Davis, and it does indicate that in some of those samples that she collected, a lot of them actually, up there high in the watershed, don't meet our nitrogen standards. Personally, I feel that it's probably a result of atmospheric deposition of nitrogen. That's an issue that that I think is ripe for reducing that deposition. I think that we're already, the regional board is already working with the California Air Resources Board to evaluate deposition of not only nitrogen, but other pollutants to our water bodies. And Harold is initiating discussions with executives at the State Water Board and the Air Resources Board to broach that subject of regulating air emissions to protect water quality. So by saying that the water coming off the glaciers or the snowmelt there high on the east side of the Sierra doesn't meet our water quality standards, that may well be true. And I think that there's a source that that we can likely control on much of that. And as a side note, there are some issues or concerns with the quality of that data. We've compared Dr. Vance's data with data collected by the USGS, like at the same point, essentially the same time or within a day or two. And there are some significant differences that we're trying to figure out what's the cause of those differences. So I'm not saying that data is no good because there's quite a bit of data there and it may well be very good. But I think that a likely source, if that proves true, would be atmospheric deposition of nitrogen. And I think it's comparing our beneficial uses there in those streams there in the Bridgeport Valley.
Thank you, Chuck. That was my point, that that the study shows that they couldn't even meet the standards. How, after that thing winds through Bridgeport and must be thousands of heads of cattle, I don't know what we can do. Maybe we can do one up on Mother Nature. I'm not too sure, but I don't think there's anything we can do with the atmosphere bringing that stuff in and the cars coming in the valley there, but that's just a side note. I just thought I'd add that. And like I said, it's extremely important. You know, Alpine County would certainly like you to put that on the watch list for a couple of years. Another problem we have is the segments of the river. The river is probably 22 miles long, and they're declaring the whole river. It seems like it should be broken up in at least four or five segments rather than the whole river being listed. It just seems logical to us. But anyway, thank you very much for your time.
John.
Chris?
I know that the watershed group that's in Alpine County has been
yes.
doing a lot of good work. And
yes.
I'm just curious, have they identified particular issues on the West Fork that they have begun to address?
You know, they're coordinating with your board, I believe our watershed group, and I think it's excellent. You know, and they have they got a $200,000 grant. I think it's from Prop 13 funds. And I think with coordination between Harold's staff and the board, I think they can do a bang-up job.
But nothing has begun as
no.
yet, as you know?
Is that, no.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge, excuse me.
I have a question. It seems plain you feel that the whatever advantage might be gained from getting money as a result of the listing is outweighed by the disadvantage of being listed?
Yes. You know, there just seems to me a stigma attached to impaired being on a list of impaired water body.
Who comes to enjoy your water body?
Oh, well, ask John. He can probably tell you.
I guess, and then the other question is, do they check the impaired water bodies list before they decide if they're going to come or not?
Never heard of it.
Well, we feel that it would be an impairment okay. to our recreation. Yes.
I guess I'm
yes.
assuming you're not going to put billboards up.
No. Every bridge. Oh, and by the way, we're filling Owens Lake, so the habitat will be back.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Questions? No one. Yes.
You know, Harold, maybe this is a good time to talk about the sentence and then the evidence comment about this one. Is this one an example of where we don't have as much data as we might like to have prior to listing?
Luckily, we have quite a bit of data on the West Fork of the Carson because the South Tahoe Public Utility District monitors water quality there and provides that data to us. So we have quite a bit of data. Yes.
And you don't think that you need to be subdividing these multiple reaches into sub-reaches?
Yes. When we have the data that can show us where those segments are meeting or where they are not meeting, we will definitely do that.
So that's a case where you don't have the data.
Right. We've got data that shows at this point in the river or at these couple of points in the river, it's impaired. And so we have identified, since we do not know, we haven't done an evaluation yet of what are all the sources of that contaminant that we're seeing busting our standards at this sampling point, we list the entire river from that point up. And part of the TMDL process or monitoring process to confirm the impairment would be to identify what is the extent of impairment along that reach of the river. And maybe very well and likely will shorten not just the West Fork of the Carson, but other segments where we've listed the entire river as well. But yeah, we definitely want to make these listed segments as small as we can, and when we have the data that and where we can do that, we do.
And what you're saying, you don't have the data.
We do not have data throughout the length of the water body, of the river. We have the data in a few places, primarily in the lower part of the...
That's kind of like the highway patrol setting 70 miles an hour on I-15 in parts and 55 and 65 in other parts, isn't it?
I would say no, it's not. And what I'm saying is that we know the water's impaired in this location, and we don't know from that point up how far the impairment extends.
Then if it was on the watch list, you could find those answers and give them back to us.
Well, we can find that information on the 303D list actually even better because it's identified as an impaired water body where funds for evaluating that water body are directed to those waters first so that we can, one, confirm the extent of impairment and then identify the sources and develop a plan to...
You have two studies that are in conflict of each other.
I wouldn't say so, sir. We have data at our only real sampling area or sampling points on this river that indicates that it's impaired. And when we have additional data that shows where that impairment, some point upstream of that, no longer exists, then we will break that into smaller segments and remove or actually clarify that the listing is only for this portion.
Chuck, looking at the list here on the West Fork of the Carson, from Woodsford to State Line is listing pathogens, and so that tells me that above Woodsford, you didn't have the pathogen problem?
That's correct.
So is there grazing below that from Woodsford down?
There are some agricultural activities below that, including grazing, yes.
What are the other agricultural activities?
You know, I'm not sure. It's primarily grazing. Perhaps Mr. Gansberg could answer that.
Perhaps it isn't.
There are campgrounds also within that area of the river.
Right?
There aren't?
No.
Woodford's down?
Not from Woodford's to State Line, I don't believe so.
And to answer Mr. Betterly, it's hay is produced in some of the sections. There are a few vegetable gardens as well.
Ready to move on? Okay, Leonard Turnbaugh, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Alpine County and Alpine Resources Conservation District.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. Thank you for letting us come and have the opportunity to address you this evening. As Supervisor Gansberg said, there was a letter sent to you from Alpine County. My office, which one of my duties is Public Works, was involved with the writing of that letter. I'm also on the Alpine Resource Conservation District Board. And what I'm here for tonight is to ask that you put this, being the West Carson and Indian Creek Reservoir, on your watch list. You're basically dealing with out-of-date water quality studies, although there's been a lot of studies taken by South Tahoe Public Utility District. It's our understanding they were taken for a different purpose, and that you're trying to get from oranges to apple juice here. After the 97 flood, your staff has said that there was an increase in the pollutants or the chemicals, minerals that you're looking at, and those have since been decreasing. That shows that we have natural things going on in that river system that are unknown. We don't know when the water samples were taken from South Tahoe by South Tahoe PUD, whether it was taken after spring or during spring runoff, after a cloud burst from a thunderstorm, during a Nevada or California week for water where the water alternates out of the reservoirs. One week is California, the river is low during the summer. The following week will be Nevada week for water. They open up reservoirs in the high country. The level goes up in the river. So you have a river that fluctuates once a week or every week, every other week, in its level. So you have a continual...
weeks of the year?
No, just during the irrigation seasons. Your basin management plans, our understanding, was last updated about 95, and it was based on information from about 94, and that should be done about every 3 years. So it's about 2 to 3 times out of date, yet you're keeping your water quality standards. You're updating those, but you haven't updated your water, your basin management plan. So we question that. We also would like to point out, similar to the Mojave delisting, where they have a water management plan in process, the watershed management group that was formed in Alpine County, which the Resource Conservation District was involved in, the Lahontan Board staff was involved in, was really a grassroots people in Alpine County coming together and saying, we want to be proactive. We want to do something to improve our waters in Alpine County. They looked at both the West and the East Carson and other streams. But I think you have a group here of people that are, have gone out. They're volunteers. They're not being paid. They have formed a group. They have gone after a grant. They have gotten a grant. And what we're asking now is let them go forward, do some studies, and find out what we're really dealing with. Let's know the science before we adopt the rules to enforce it.
Could I ask the same question of you that I asked of the supervisor, which is, what's the disadvantage to you of this being listed? It seems to me that it just brings more money in to be, make the work that you've already started better funded.
I guess it's we're fear of the stigma, and that other actions that the county may want to take won't fit into the standard that's been set, such as, phosphate, for example, on this hypothetical. But if there was a development or something that could go on that might increase that level, all of a sudden we would have a comment coming out that we're going to exceed the standards when we don't even know what those standards should be, because we don't know whether we're dealing with natural phosphate from the 87 fire that burned 6,000 acres through that canyon, or the fire that came just a year ahead of it that burned 3,000 acres, all in the watershed, you know, releasing the phosphorus back into the system. So we just feel that there's too many unknowns, and to buy 2 years and to do some studying here, a couple of years, what is going to be lost? I think that we are on the same side, really. We want to be proactive and not reactive. Thank you.
I'm probably going to ask you, once the counties, having been a county supervisor, I can tell you, once things are listed, they take an altogether different view of how they're going to move forward.
Who's the they?
The Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
They take a different view of it. They really feel that their hands are tied when things are listed. I don't care whether it's an endangered species or what it is, but if I'm right, they take an all different view of it after something's been listed. And I don't care what it's listed on. It's when it's listed, they kind of panic, and they just kind of want to throw up their hands. If we can put them on watch lists and make them their feet to the fire and get these studies done, I think we're far better off for the end results than we are spooking a county board of supervisors, because those people got to stand for re-election. You know?
I have a question of Chuck. The comment that the gentleman just made, I'm sorry I didn't catch his name, but on the fires and the phosphate issue, was that taken into consideration?
The standard, for example, for phosphorus is a mean of monthly means, and we certainly saw a jump in phosphorus levels in the river during the 97 floods. Whether, you know, how much of that was a result of phosphorus mobilized from the fires or not, we don't know. But we've got 20 or more years of data for this river that shows the phosphorus, it's not meeting our standards here. And so
it fluctuates, does it not?
Certainly it fluctuates. They're all of our water bodies are subject to natural processes, and there are fluctuations, and we try to take those fluctuations into consideration.
Sure. Following on to that, if you have 20 years of studies, the two fires, if I recall, one was 84, Leonard, correct me, 86 and 87. So you should have something prior to that.
Frankly, I'm not familiar enough with the data to be able to comment on how those concentrations jumped associated with that.
We saw this in San Bernardino County in the Willow Fire, on the Inspiration Point Fire. We saw all of those kind of things where they fluctuate high levels.
Chuck, in summary here, do you feel that the data is ample and sufficient, given all the comments tonight, to continue to list this body of water? Or are there some lack of data that might indicate maybe it should be on the watch list?
No, I think we have a lot of data on this water body. It certainly does not meet our standard, and therefore I believe that we're required to list the water body.
I'm having some difficulty, and I'm not really disagreeing with you, Chuck, but looking at your list here, it shows that sodium and, well, both the sodium, it says the standard needs to be revised. And
yes, for sodium, Staff has made that notation, similar to the iron standard. The sodium standard was developed to protect agricultural uses downstream, and that measure is no longer the appropriate measure for protecting agricultural uses. So we feel that the standard needs to be updated to reflect, you know, what is used nowadays. But nonetheless, we have the data that shows the standard is being violated.
I think what's going through my mind is that we have a list of TMDLs and things to do that is so far out there that we're not going to touch. I mean, it's going to take a lot of years. Your staff is you're short of staff, and I mean, you're doing the best you can, but we've got so much work to do. Looking at some of these things where we're talking about things that we may need to adjust the standard. What, and when we have people saying that, you know, don't list it yet. Give us another 2 years. You might get better data. You know, are we going to be amending the basin plan to change some of these things? And does 2 years hurt that if in 2 years we list it? We have better data, standards may change where something may not be need to be on the list. Are we violating a federal law or something by not listing it?
Can I answer that question?
Okay.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
The US EPA's interpretation is that even when the regional board is in the process of updating water quality standards, if the readily available data and information for the water body show that it violates the current standards, you have to put it on your 303D list and then delist it after the water quality standard is revised.
Thank you.
And I also would like to add that once a water body does get to the TMDL development stage, at that point, there's a much more extensive analysis. There's a much more extensive investigation of what the sources of the impairment are, allocations, load allocations. And so these issues with the data will become clear in the TMDL process.
So you're,
there's no time limit on that, is there? It can be down the road 15 years.
It'll be in the process of developing a TMDL, and before the TMDL is developed, obviously it won't be enforced.
But you're also saying that it doesn't matter. It's the latest available data, even if that's several years old. If that shows that we're exceeding standards, then we're obliged to list it.
Required.
If the scientific conclusion from that data is that the water body is impaired, and that's a technical issue for staff, but they have made that determination.
And I think, you know, just to follow up on this, that's the reason why in the list we talk about standards that we think need to be reevaluated. So we want to be clear up front. We're listing this, but the first thing we really want to do is look at the standard. We're listing it because we believe the EPA's guidance to us on listing
requires
us to list it, but we want to make it real clear to everybody, including the board, that our major focus here is to look at the standard, not to start developing a TMDL.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Because there's so much time and effort that goes into... And,
but again, you know, we have to look at it this way. This is a staff opinion. It is our opinion that the standard needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
You have to ultimately make the decision to change the standard. And so we can't anticipate what you might do when we bring this to you. You may reject our proposal to change the standard. So at this point, they're in violation of the current standard that a board adopted.
Bring it on.
Well, I think that council has clarified some things in my mind that I don't really like, but I don't think we have much choice.
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to the local efforts to deal with the impairments, such as, you know, as they're able to discover. But if we don't have any discretion, then we can work on the standard if it proves to be appropriate to change the standard, but that we can't do tonight.
There again, what kind of staff do we have? We got to move forward on these things.
And by moving forward and listing it, we will gain access to more funding to get the information we need more quickly. That would then play on whether the standard needs to be adjusted.
Is there anybody from?
Is that correct thinking?
Let me step out here and say there's nobody from EPA in the audience.
We can
potentially use some TMDL funding to relook at standards. Our basin plan.
We didn't hear that here.
I know. No, our basin plan funding is really limited, but it's our intent really to look at these standards and not to do the TMDL because it's going to take a lot less resources on our part to amend the standard than it is to do a TMDL.
And frankly, I think the EPA would agree with that because the foundation of listing and doing TMDLs is first, you know, what are the appropriate standards to either protect the beneficial use or prevent degradation of the water body? And so in the first step of looking towards developing a TMDL, looking at those standards and their appropriateness, that's definitely part of the initial work of developing a TMDL in my mind.
May I add just a comment? I sense our hands are tied, as Jack has mentioned, and by the direction of EPA and our council. I do think that the people of Alpine County, and I'm glad to be one of them, have worked hard to progress on this issue, and that I would encourage the staff to be sensitive and work very, very closely side by side, hand in hand with them as they go forward. I know that there's a little concern given that the county is about 95% federal or state owned, and they get a little prickly over things coming down from on top, and I think that this needs to come from from underneath and beside.
We are very glad that that there is a group, a watershed group in Alpine County now. I think Eric, who's familiar with the Truckee River, quite familiar, has seen how the listing of that water body and work to evaluate the condition there has really brought the community forward to address from a community basis, from the ground up, not from us coming down necessarily, but to evaluate what can we as members of this community and this watershed do to protect and or restore this water body. So I think it's a good thing. You know, I understand the concern of a stigma. However, I think it's really unwarranted. Lake Tahoe has been listed for years, yet I don't believe there's a stigma attached to visiting Lake Tahoe associated with it. The East Fork of the Carson River in Alpine County has been listed for years. It's known as an excellent fishing area, and it's a great resource for Alpine County. I don't believe there's a stigma associated with that that's impacted the resources in their economy there associated with the listing. Thank you.
Okay, moving right along. Edwin James from the Carson Water Subconservancy District.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Ed James. I'm the general manager for the Carson Water Subconservancy District. For those not familiar, we are a multi-county agency, basically by Nevada legislature. We have all four counties in our organization. By a joint powers agreement, we have Alpine County. So we represent all the counties in the watershed for the Carson watershed. Our main focus is basically to strip away county and state lines, look at the water resources in this watershed, and find out what's the best for the community based on a limited water resource and a finite source, but unlimited demands. What I want to talk to briefly is the listing on the Carson. Give you an example. We're working with the Nevada Department of Environment Protection Agency dealing with the same issue, in fact, downstream in Nevada. And I want to deal with phosphorus, so I'm more familiar with that. The standard you have here that's proposed, or it's actually on the books for the West Fork, is 0.02 milligrams per liter. When you get in Nevada, it's 0.1. And yet, we cannot meet the standards in Nevada. And so we are working right now with NDP and the USGS to look at identifying where the sources are coming from. It is a real concern to us that we are not meeting the standards. It's considered impaired down in Nevada. But the problem is we have very little data that really shows where it's coming from. A lot of it is naturally occurring. fact, the data we're looking, and that's why we have the USGS gathering the data, is identifying that. The problem I see today here is the standards are not appropriate for the region. Now, I know you can't deal with the standards today, but I think it's something you need to look at 0.02. When the standards were originally developed and the water quality was taken, the USGS also took data. They took it at storm events. And the quality at that time was higher than the samples that were taken by this district or your board or your staff back in 81, 82. When you have a storm event, you have an increase in phosphorus. In fact, the study that we're doing with the USGS is coming up and taking samples right now up in Alpine at Wolfsburg and other places. Now, the data has not been allowed to be submitted at this time, but I can tell you right now that it exceeds the standards you currently have on the West Fork. So there is definitely a question with your standards that need to be looked at. When you start looking at developing TMDLs, which this eventually leads to, one of the things you have to look at is that a TMDL cannot be, or impairment cannot be considered based on natural causes. And what we're finding is that there's a lot of phosphorus in the soil naturally. And every time you have a storm event or something, you're going to get a higher loading. The problem with the sampling that's been taken in the past is when they go out in timing, the timing of it. A lot of times, if you take it when the storm has gone by and it's steadied, you'll find that the quality improves and it meets your 0.02. On Indian Creek Reservoir that was proposed, taking your own data and running in your own terms on your 10-year running average, every spring you violate the 0.02 standard. It's naturally occurring on that. And we're seeing that also down below. Our phosphorus levels down below on the East Fork, we're getting levels as high as 0.3. And these are coming after storm events. And if you're familiar with East Fork, there is not much above, Gardnerville that would cause that, except for natural crossing. Now, we are dealing with the USGS and with NDEP, and what we want to do is also work with this board to help identify those sources. Because the problem we talk about funding is that there is not enough money out there to go after all these unless you really know where the problem is. And that is why we're working with Nevada to identify, because we have funding concerns. And if you just say, okay, we assume this, and you start doing your TMDLs and you develop your resources, you're going to go after the wrong things. And so you want to spend your money smartly. The issue of why go with a watch versus a listing, everyone says there's funding available. Well, the question is there really funding available? Show me the money, and I guess you could say that, yes. But I know the list that you guys are dealing with and the requirements of funding on that. Do you have funding in the next 2 years to really look at these standards? We have some funding available. We also work with other agencies. We bring in the USGS. We like to work with that. We would like to see identify what the true background sources are, know where the sources are coming from, and do that. And I don't know if listing it helps it or hinders it. And that's the question that we would really ask to look at. Another thing you need to be aware of, we talk about beneficial use. 0.02 does not impair, we're going about impair your beneficial use. It is way below that. The water quality here is so good that you can go up a lot higher. 0.1 does not impair cold water fishery. So we're not impairing your beneficial use. It's the not allowing water to deteriorate for the sake of deteriorating. And that's what you're looking at. But those are things you have to look at and making sure we're not going after the wrong thing. There are talks about going after and fencing. What are other things going on there? If it's natural occurring, you can spend a lot of money and make the individuals and people in the county, and I know the Alpine County has expressed this, of spending a lot of their resources, which they don't have, on something that will not benefit the standards. So my agency has taken action. We wrote a letter. We want to look at this. We want to work jointly with your agency like we're doing in Nevada. We want to help identify these and come up with better standards. So I know we've been here a long time, so I will keep that short. There's other comments, but I'd like to work with staff on that later.
So Chuck. Chuck.
He knows Chuck.
Chuck knows you.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a quick question here because maybe I'm confused, and maybe you can help me, but the implication is that whenever there's a storm event, any constituent that gets into the water body as a result of that storm event is due to natural causes?
No.
That's what I thought I heard you say, and I wasn't sure.
No, but the opposite is whatever people were saying. Everyone was complaining about it was agriculture or it was urban runoff. What we're now looking at and part of the study, and this is what we're doing with the USGS and NDEP, is identifying at different points we take samples. If you look at your own data, and actually you find, when I looked at your data on the, I think it was 97, you have a huge spike of phosphorus at Wolfsburg, but when down below, it's at 0.03. Yet all your other years of records show that down below is always higher than Woodford's. So what happened? It's probably a timing issue when you take your samples. I was told that when the USGS took their samples back in 81, 82, the same time this board was, that that data was not included in when you set your standards. And the reason was because they looked at mostly storm events. But if you include that data, you'll see that the standard that was based on 0.02 should have been closer to 0.03 or even 0.04, much higher. So it really is an issue of when you're taking your samples of identifying, because if you go out there and take it after a storm event, I guarantee you it's going to be greater than your standard.
But I guess the point I guess I'm trying to make here is that it's the storm event that mobilizes pollutants from non-point source activities. And if you don't take it during storm events, you will never capture the load that might be coming from those non-point source activities that can be controlled.
But they were never considered when you set your standards originally. So your standards are too low. That's what I'm saying.
But should the standard accept the discharge from non-point source activities that may be mobilized during storm events?
I don't think it should. It's your question.
If it's naturally occurring, that seems to be the question.
And that's what you need to identify. I'm not saying we haven't looked at it, but I think if you look at it on some of the data we've had already, we see that every time there's a large event coming down on the East Fork of the Carson, and if you know the East Fork of the Carson coming down there, we see it as high as 0.3 or higher in phosphorus.
And some of that may be due to just natural geology, but other parts of that constituent loading could in fact be due to non-point sources that are being mobilized as a result of the event.
But have you looked at it? And that's the question is, have you really looked at it?
But I think that's part of the TMDL process, to determine if in fact the loading that's contributing to the exceedance of the standard can be controllable through non-point source controls, or whether it in fact is 90% natural and dealing with the 10% isn't gonna help you much. That's the process of the TMDL.
When you get into it, and what we're doing with Nevada is that says, before you start setting your TMDLs, let's have better data. Let's have good science. And that's our goal.
And that's part of TMDLs.
Mm-hmm. But we're not seeing, the idea is that's a precursor to this. But we're going out there, we're proactive. And before we set that TMDL and all that, and what we're finding is there's a lot of, the data is not as good as we thought. You have a lot of data here, but how good is your really data? Have you really analyzed it? We want to do that because I think if you do that, you can identify, because when you even get to that point, you want to know where it's coming from because you have limited resources and you'd rather spend your money where you fix the problem than having other things down.
But I guess the point I guess I'm making is that process we think is an integral part of the TMDL development and to determine whether even a TMDL is appropriate for that water body. But I don't think it's necessary for the listing. And maybe that's the point I'm trying to make is that what you're suggesting to be done, we would like to work with you on that because we think that data will help us to determine whether a TMDL is appropriate, and if so, what are the sources that we should go after in terms of trying to get reductions. But right now, the standard is being violated.
Right.
We think it may be due in part to natural, in part to man-caused activities, and it's appropriate to list it.
That's what I'm saying today is I think that, and I'm not going to argue if it's impaired or not, because that's not my, you've already heard other people talk. What I'm saying is, you really need to look at the standards, and I would like to see a commitment that this board look at that because I think you're going to find a much better, it'll be based on better science. That's all I'm asking for is before we start going to a TMDL, let's make sure that the standards are appropriate.
You've heard it expressed multiple times tonight that we are indeed looking at the standards, but we're not going to get it done tonight.
No, I agree. Thank you.
Are Robert Baer and Hal Bird a tag team, or can one of you do this? Gonna flip a coin?
we're going to tag team. I'm sorry. I know you would like to move on, but this is a very important issue to the district. I'm Bob Baer. I'm the general manager of the South.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Thank you. Questions on joining the board? You may wonder why the South Tahoe Public Utility District is interested in the Carson River. I know Neil knows. He and I have worked together on several projects, but one of the reasons is the Port of Colon Act requires the district to discharge all the wastewater from the Tahoe Basin, and it goes to Alpine County. So part of our waste discharge requirements is this monitoring. There has been a lot of discussion about the monitoring, and most of the monitoring data is the district's data. And as others have pointed out, we monitor for other reasons. Waste discharge requirements require it. When do the data, I believe, is in some areas incomplete. When do we monitor? We monitor because it's Tuesday. We don't monitor because it's raining. What's going on? What are the diversions? All those things. I think all that information would be very helpful in determining this. There's been discussion about looking at the standards, looking at future TMDLs. Well, if we don't get the data, we can't evaluate the standards in the future, and it certainly has to be done before we set TMDLs. So my point is we need to start today. Judith was nice enough to come to a meeting and address us. She talked about the Carson River used to be one of the five high-priority watersheds for this regional board. My request to you is continue to make it a high priority, put staff resources in it that can help coordinate all this. You heard Mr. James is doing, his group is doing some monitoring. The district's doing some monitoring. Alpine County's doing some monitoring. If that isn't all coordinated, the data will be inconsistent. So that's my pitch to you, is let's start tomorrow. Tomorrow isn't Tuesday, it's Thursday, but we could start getting the right information next Tuesday.
Did you take the samples yesterday?
Yes, we did. So those are my brief comments, and I know Hal has a couple of more brief comments.
I'll try not to comment on the appropriate standards and everything. You've heard that all too much. My comments were on more of the 303 listing. It's more than a stigma. The district has been on the 303 list since 1997. We operate Indian Creek Reservoir. It used to be a recycled water storage reservoir. We were put on in 1997 when it was recycled water. We changed that 2 years later to a freshwater reservoir and to improve the water quality. Unfortunately, that put us underwater the state of the U.S. So now we're really on the 303 list. We probably should have got off when we were recycled water. Now that's moving forward to a TMDL, a draft TMDL. I was glad some of the comments I heard today or this evening was there's no need for a TMDL. Maybe we can get off under the 303. So that was a positive thing. The other issue that I wanted to talk about was this priority. Things are being listed as high priorities and low priorities, and I'm a little confused of how we – seems like we're always on the high priority for getting the project done, but under funding, we're under the low priority. Tonight, it appears that you're going to be mandated to list these boards, as your attorney has said. You're going to add more people looking for that funding. We've applied for Prop 13 funding. We were originally going to be one of the first two TMDLs for the Lahontan region, so we thought we should be one of the top priority for funding. We didn't rank in the funding list. We didn't get the funding. The last two times the Prop 13 has come up, we've been recommended not to even apply because all the funding had to go to Southern California. We've applied for 319 grants. It appears we're not going to get that funding. So you're adding another group to that list. It's going to get a little competitive. So if we can work as a group and you put this down as a high priority, we would appreciate, you know, the funding some way tied to that. And I guess that's pretty much my comments, but I just want to say that the 303 listing has a lot more impact than just a stigma. It's cost us a heck of a lot of money also. Thank you.
Excuse me, Darlene Ruiz, IMCC.
Gone home, huh?
I hope this isn't too close, Susan Murray. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board, staff. Thank you for the opportunity to comment upon your 303D listing process. I'd like to bring, you have discussed parts of Searles, and a lot has been told to you about this, and there are a lot of questions. I'm just as anxious as you are, Madam Chair, to get to the factual setting, to get the hard data. And Mr. Singer is quite correct. Those evidentiary hearings are planned in the future, and I'm hoping that they'll come quickly. But for purposes of this listing, I'd like to make 2 points. First, the question, and it's maybe I'm confused because I don't understand the Clean Water Act and Port of Cologne, but if I am confused, it's a 20-year confusion, because you folks don't implement federal law. What you do is through the delegated program, you operate and do every action you do pursuant to state law, which has been found by US EPA to be consistent, including 6816, your anti-degradation policy and the like, to be consistent, sufficient that US EPA has now delegated you the program to be able to implement it. So I think it's important that we always emphasize that you could, and the state legislature could, even change, looking at what US EPA has put into their regs governing even this 303D listing, could alter it as long as US EPA continues to deem whatever the state does is consistent with its federal act. And I believe your counsel would confirm that point. I think that's an important point. Some of what you've heard here is that you lack flexibility to some degree, and I think that's true for the most part. Litigation and US EPA and its relationship with the state seem to be closing the box on not just California, but all the states. But one of the things I think your staff has done and done very ably here is looked at the statute, looked at the regulations governing the program and the listing process, and provided you, I think, in an overhead that was provided earlier, your considerations for listing and delisting. And I again refer to it specifically. List if standards are violated, consider data quality, quantity, delist if faulty data led to listing, delist if impairment is entirely natural, and delist if remedial activities will ensure attainment within the next listing cycle. I think maybe that shouldn't really be a delist per se as much as perhaps move to a lower list. And I would again cite this board specifically to section 130.27 of 40 CFR for supporting my position on that. In keeping with that, I think there are 2 points that Searles Valley creates. One is the question about waters of the United States. And we would like some kind of reference, and Mr. Singer has indicated that you will be considering that point, on that you haven't made that determination yet. Because it is not appropriate, I believe, to say that the state of California is only doing this to list U.S. waters, waters of the U.S. I think you could make the argument that because you're implementing state law, you're doing this because it's a rational part of your planning process, and you really are looking to see all the waters of the state and decide which are impaired and which are not. You can use it to give parts of it to US EPA to satisfy their needs, but certainly you have the latitude to do it for a broader purpose, and I would encourage you to view it that way. For purposes of Searles Valley, I would ask that you put us on that fourth list. I think we do meet that criteria, even for hydrocarbons, because frankly, I was a little disappointed after all the work that has happened out there to learn that the conclusion of the staff in their staff report is that we're not going to reach attainment by the next cycle. yet I've been looking at all the Gantt charts that we've been providing to the board regularly, and compliance and cleanup, even rescission of the cleanup and abatement order, we fully expect within the next 2 years. I mean, even though we're coming in and asking for you to really examine closely the water quality standards out there, and we will be pushing that aggressively, I mean, this company is still pushing very hard to meet your existing standards. And so I submit to you that quite the contrary. Our orders and every work that we are now passing upon, work plan and work product, is scheduled to be completed before your next listing cycle. And as such, I would ask that pursuant to 130.27, subsection 4, that we be placed into that fourth category. Are there any questions? I also have with me Arzel Hale of the company, as well as Chuck Hungerford of Heller Ehrman, who also represents IMCC.
Can I have a little clarification of that section you read?
Okay.
Just briefly.
Okay. I appreciate it. 130.27, and I quote, subsection A, your list of impaired water bodies must include the following four parts, and it then lists part one, part two, part three, and goes to part four. Subsection part four reads, and I quote, water bodies that are impaired for which the state, territory, or authorized tribe demonstrates that water quality standards will be attained by the date of submission of the next list as a result of implementation of technology-based effluent limitations as required by certain provisions of the Act, or regulation, or stringent water quality-based effluent limitations in NPDES permits. A TMDL is not required for water bodies on this Part 4 list because you're using other means to get there. And as in IMCC's case, Searles Valley, you folks should take pride in the fact that you are pushing Searles Valley far faster than any of the TMDL schedules that are set out for any of these other water bodies. And you will not need TMDLs here.
Thank you.
I have a few comments. As far as whether or not a TMDL is required, that doesn't affect the issue of whether or not to list it. There may be another way to address the impairment besides doing a TMDL, but that's really not a listing issue. As far as the issue of federal versus state law, I don't know that that distinction is too important for this discussion, but what we're doing in this process is implementing the Clean Water Act 303D listing process. That's federal law. California is delegated the authority to enforce that federal law in California. I suppose we could enact legislation in which we did a 303D type list for waters of the state, but we haven't done that yet. What we're doing now is implementing the EPA's program. In doing that, we're subject to the EPA regs and the EPA's interpretation of those regs. They have final approval authority over our 303D list as well as our TMDLs and our program. If we wanted to change our state program or our state regs in a manner that conflicted with the Clean Water Act or the regulations under the Clean Water Act, those changes wouldn't be approved by US EPA, and ultimately we could even lose our delegation to enforce the Clean Water Act.
And Chair, if I may, I'm sorry. Just to, I would confirm that, but also please know that the state of California submits its basin plans to US EPA for approval, and your basin plans cover groundwater, cover a number of other things that are not governed by the Clean Water Act. And as such, you do it for a much broader purpose, which is the state law, which I believe that is what she is referencing.
But clearly, we do water quality planning under the Clean Water Act as well as under state law.
We have one last speaker, Julie Conboy, City of Los Angeles, Department of Water and Power.
Good evening. I'll make this short so you can get some rest. My name is Julie Conboy, and I'm a deputy city attorney with the City of Los Angeles and the Department of Water and Power. I'm here with regards to the Haywee Reservoir, which is currently listed for impairment by copper sulfate. The California Department of Health Services requires us to apply copper sulfate, and that is applied to prevent the growth of algae in that reservoir. Haywee, as I'm quite sure Madam Chairwoman knows, is located south of Bishop, and it was built in 1913 as part of the Los Angeles Aqueduct. It's about 10 miles south of Owens Lake. It is not a natural water body by any means. William Mulholland and his crew built the reservoir. Its purpose is to hold drinking water before it goes to the city of Los Angeles, and it provides a direct source of drinking water for the dam keeper and other workers who live and work right at that area. This is solely intended as a drinking water reservoir. For its sole purpose is that. The drinking water chemicals that the city of Los Angeles applies to Hayway are, as I said earlier, applied to prevent algae, the growth of algae, which numerous studies have shown can cause neurological problems in women, in children, in people, and animals. And this is something that needs to be prevented before it grows. If the algae grows, skimming it off the top, doing treatment later is not as good as preventing it to grow. The other water suppliers in the state also treat their water with copper sulfate. The California Department of Health Services, as a condition of allowing the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power to allow fishing at that reservoir, required that it continue to apply copper sulfate as needed. The only copper sulfate drinking water chemical that ever goes in there is done when it is determined that the algae will be growing and it is necessary to prevent that. This message that we're getting from the state is hard to reconcile for the regulated community. On one hand, the Department of Health Services is saying, put this in or you can't deliver this water. And on the other hand, we are currently in the process of the TMDL process with the Lahontan Regional Board. And as an aside, the staff at DWP has a delightful relationship with the staff here. They like working with them. It's just, at this point, we think that this is not the water body to be doing that process with. And going along that line, we do not claim that our entire aqueduct system is not a water of the United States. We are particularly addressing the Hayway Reservoir in this case, and we are dealing with recent pronouncements from the U.S. Supreme Court, as well as what is considered navigable and what the Army Corps of Engineers has considered a water of the United States. Other speakers have addressed the board's need to change its beneficial uses for other water bodies, so I will just say that we echo that. We think that this water body should be limited to its primary purpose as a drinking water reservoir, and nobody is allowed to swim there, and this is not, other beneficial uses really are not attainable, and they should not be listed in the basin plan. The data that the listing, the original listing was based upon did come from Department of Fish and Game studies and data, and we did take issue with that back in the early 90s. I won't go into that into great detail, but we do have questions as to the validity of that science, and we believe that we can find ways of protecting the drinking water and working with the state. We just don't believe that the TMDL process and retaining Hayway on the list is the most beneficial use of the limited state and local government resources that are out there in these times. And in conclusion, I believe that we all share the same goals in protecting water and our environment, and we hope that we can come to some understanding with the Lahontan Board that would allow everyone to do their jobs. Unless there are any questions.
Thank you. We would like to take a break. I hope maybe some of you would like to take a break. But
seeing as how it's 10 of 10, let's make it as short as possible and come right back, please.
Sure.
No more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
More like 5. This meeting. Okay. We're back in session then.
Madam Chair, could I ask Council a question, please?
I think you can.
I'll try. Council, I heard you say a moment ago that it was mandated to put these on and list them. Now, isn't listing them on a watch list still listing them?
No, it's not. The watch list is actually for water bodies that are suspected to be impaired but don't have sufficient data. For example, a water body where one fish kill was observed and nobody knows why or what the impairment is. And so it's watched and further data is collected. But once there's sufficient data to determine that a water body is not meeting water quality standards, then it needs to be on the actual 303 list.
It still shows our intent, if we put it on a watch list, that we put it on a list, correct?
No. Well, it's not on the list for developing TMDLs. It's on a list to be watched. It's a different list.
I guess the point here is the watch list is an unofficial list of water bodies that we believe.
But we just heard, Harold, a minute ago, there's 4 categories, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the 4th category.
No, none of those categories are a watch list. That is not an official category. The watch list that we are proposing is not an official list that EPA would be adopting as part of the 303D list. So what council indicated was that if you believe the data is sufficient to demonstrate that there's an impairment, then you must put it on the 303D list.
And if we feel that it needs to be watched, you put it on the watch list.
If you feel that the data does not demonstrate that there's an impairment or there's insufficient data, then you could put it on a watch list. But it's all based on your evaluation of the data.
And, of course, if subsequent data show that it shouldn't be on the 303D list or if the water quality standards are revised so that it no longer needs to be on the list, then you would delist it in the next cycle.
In the next cycle, but that's 2 years down the road.
Time goes quickly when you're on the regional
board. Before we start, I would like to make one more disclosure. In reading this in detail, I discovered that Watson Creek, which is not proposed to be on the list but which is on the watch list, borders my house. I just want to make that disclosure.
You can't fish it.
Still, it's a problem.
There are no fish.
The officers will escort you from the building.
Okay.
So.
Maybe I think the key, I guess, one of the key issues outstanding is to address the question that a number of commenters have raised about whether the water body in question is a water of the U.S. And we've come up with some language that we would suggest adding we would add to the staff report. And Lori, if you could, I don't know who has that at this point. Chuck, do you have the? Okay. Oh yeah.
Chuck. Okay.
Before you go, Chuck, go ahead.
Before Chuck gets up here, we just want to announce to those of you who, in the audience who are waiting on the aquatic pesticide issue that we're going
herbicide.
To take it up. I'm sorry.
Herbicide.
I'm sorry. Okay, still a pesticide.
It's still a side.
It's a side, yes. And it's going to be cited until tomorrow because we won't be able to get to it tonight and still be on the level of consciousness. So we'll be back at 8:30 tomorrow morning, at which time we will take up that issue. And we apologize for having you sit here, but we'd like for you not to have to sit here any longer. Okay, Chuck.
So as I said earlier, in staff's recommendation is that the board adopt the resolution as modified with the removal of the Mojave River. In addition to that, we recommend that in the staff report, a sentence be added on page 3 under the section identified as the section 303D list, immediately before the last sentence of the first paragraph.
Say again, please?
The staff report is immediately behind the green sheet.
Okay.
So if you could, yeah. Okay.
So on page 3, first paragraph, immediately before the last sentence of that paragraph, we would add a sentence that says this. A number of commenters have raised concerns that specific water bodies, for example, Haywee Reservoir, Tenamaha Reservoir, and Searles Lake, may not be waters of the U.S. and therefore not subject to 303D listing. Period.
You don't say anything like we reach no conclusion about this, or, I mean, that kind of just leaves us out here someplace, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Why do we have to even add?
We have to cover it.
Well, it clarifies or helps.
Yeah, we at least knew that it was an issue.
It's an issue.
Acknowledge that it's an issue.
They brought it up as an issue. Why do we?
And we're not going to come down on either side of it yet.
Right. This is not the proper forum here tonight to do that.
But couldn't we add that additional sentence this issue is not decided yet, or something, that's just to bring it to a conclusion that we've reached no conclusion?
Right. Well, as counsel indicated earlier, I think we have at least made a preliminary indication that we feel, or at least staff feels, and the board follows that staff reasoning, that thank you for the clarification, I'll remember that. that these are waters of the U.S., otherwise we wouldn't be putting them on a 303D list.
Okay, who makes that decision?
Which decision?
Whether they're waters of the U.S. or not.
Well, I guess the way I would look at it is, eventually, I think you're going to have to deal with that issue for each of these questionable water bodies. You know, there's going to be a lot of homework that's going to have to be done. We're going to have to look at a lot of whatever interpretation of law has come out of the courts at this point, whatever guidance has been distributed by US EPA or the Corps of Engineers. But, you know, clearly there's at least a question on some of these water bodies, but you know, in order to put it on the 303D list, you have to at least believe that they are waters of the U.S. But I think that the dischargers, or the people that have raised the comments, obviously don't want you to have to make that formal statement, because then they would object to it through the process, because once it went through the process without some kind of caveat, and it wasn't appealed or petitioned, that could be another hurdle that they're going to have to go over if we decide against their.
Would it be correct then to conclude that the final decision on that hasn't yet been made?
Any decision.
Or any decision. I'm just asking.
I wouldn't say that no decision has been made, because you are listing the waters. As far as the current state of the law, the recent U.S. Supreme Court case referred to as Swank held that isolated wetlands with no intrastate isolated wetlands with no connection to interstate commerce are not waters of the United States. The basis for finding that those were waters of the United States was that migratory birds that cross state lines stop there. The U.S. Supreme Court said that the migratory bird rule was invalid and that non-navigable isolated wetlands aren't waters of the United States. There's a big dispute about what the implications of that decision are. I think all of the waters in question here are navigable. Staff can address the factual issues more. There's also a subsequent Ninth Circuit decision which held that man-made waters which connect to waters of the United States are also waters of the United States. In that case, it was irrigation canals, so that those waters are subject to regulation under the Clean Water Act.
Well, the only reason I'm saying this is that if you put that language in and you say that some people have contested it, but you're putting it on the list anyway somehow implies that it is, that then are you not really precipitating the type of argument that, you know, that you're trying to avoid? And if the final decision hasn't yet been made, then wouldn't it be better to also add something that says that if at such time a final decision is made, they are found not to be waters of the United States, they should not be included on the list. That way, you don't precipitate an argument, which you're trying to avoid.
And I think that's our intent here, is to put off that discussion until we can really sit down and analyze these, you know, and the case law that goes with it, and bring you a recommendation as to whether they really should be or shouldn't be.
I understand that. Then would there be something wrong with then also saying that if at such time a final decision is made, they're determined not to be waters of the United States, they should be removed from the list, or the contrary of it, however you could also say if at such time a final decision is made, they are found to be waters of the United States, they should remain on the list. You could say either way.
Well, as with the case of questionable data or subsequent data that shows earlier data to be questionable, if a later determination is made that some of these water bodies are not waters of the United States, you could always delist them. So we could add language to reflect that.
That might eliminate an immediate argument, which I think is what we're trying to do.
But we were already operating under that presumption anyway, so I'm not sure why we have to specifically say it, since it's the ground rule. Mm-hmm.
It's correct. To me that's assumed anyway in this process.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, legally it doesn't add anything.
I'm not sure why we need that, and I'm not even sure why we need that.
Yeah, I think adding what you added really, in effect, precipitates the argument.
I think it just points out that there is an issue here, that there is an issue that certain commenters have made, and we recognize that it is an issue with them.
Isn't this submitted as testimony anyway?
Yes.
Let it stand as a part of the record. We don't need to reference it.
That's true. There, if anybody wants to see it, it's already there.
Neil points out it just precipitates questions.
I don't know if we've still eliminated the need for some of these entities to challenge placing this on a 303B list because of the implication that it is a water of the U.S.
Well, if just you
without saying anything,
if you make it clear that you haven't yet reached the final determination. Then the challenge wouldn't be to whether it belongs on the 303D list. The challenge would be whether it was a water of the United States, which is a challenge that should come back here for this board to make a decision on.
Well, that begs the question, because it wouldn't be on the 303D list if it wasn't a water of the United States. And as far as challenging it, these are just recommendations to the state board, and whatever language we put in the staff report, the commenters are free to make the same comments when the state board is reviewing the list. There'll be another public process.
All these water bodies are already on the current 303D list, correct? Harold?
Yes, they are.
Yes.
So we're not changing anything by continuing them.
Just dump it in Art's lap.
Yeah. Right. Glad to hear
Art. Art looks happy.
Thank you.
And then maybe I could address the question that Ms. Ruiz raised about that fourth category, which my understanding, I think, still is that the implication there is that if we believe that the impairment will be corrected within 2 years, that there's no need to list it. Oh, it's okay. Maybe Chuck? I think there's, I guess, maybe a disagreement here between our criteria for not putting something on a list versus what Ms. Ruiz is reading from the CFR. I'm thinking there's one list, not four lists, as you pointed out. So help me here.
I believe that her reference to 130.27 and the four items, the last of those was, will a technological fix take care of this prior to the next listing cycle?
But is that, I guess the question, though, is do you still put it on the 303D list with some footnote or whatever under it, or do you just not list it?
If staff feels that that is the case, that all of the water quality standards will be met due to those technological fixes, you don't list it.
Yeah, that was clear.
Well, I think there's a difference of opinion out there, but okay. Maybe the way I guess I would approach this, and I talk with Hassan Bakai, who you know, has been following the IMCC situation is that at this point, staff does not believe, even though with all the good intentions of IMCC, that we don't have strong guarantees that there that the impairment will be corrected by the next listing cycle. So that our recommendation to you is we do not agree with that presumption that it will be fixed by the next listing cycle, and therefore we would recommend you list it.
Well, and this regulation also says that it will be listed in the meantime.
Does it?
Correct.
I can stand here today and say we will not be developing a TMDL for Searles Lake in the near term.
It's on. It's in.
Okay.
So we are at the point of having a recommendation from staff that we adopt the list with the changes on page 7 of the presentation. Do you want me to read them?
Yes.
That we consider comments when developing future priorities for monitoring and standards revisions. We clarify the Searles Lake fact sheet regarding bird kills, but list for petroleum hydrocarbons due to violations of other standards. That we delete 3 proposed listings for Mojave River, TDS, chloride, and sulfate, and place the river on the watch list.
Plus the late errata corrections that we got, the pink sheets. Late revisions.
The pink sheets is the Mojave.
And the 2 errata sheets.
And then there are 2 errata sheets.
Okay.
And then you're going to leave the Carson on or on a watch list?
Our recommendation is that we leave it on the 303D list.
I thought we had no discretion anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the discretion you have is the determination as to whether the data supports a determination of impairment. We believe it does. But that is still your call. Our recommendation is...
We can make a finding that it doesn't.
I think you can, in your judgment, you can determine that data that has been presented does not.
But none of the presentation tonight. I mean, we go back through and look at this page.
I'm not suggesting you do that.
I know, but yeah. I'm just saying that none of the presentation tonight armed us to be able to make that kind of decision.
And I would agree with you.
One way or the other. I mean, basically, we accept the staff recommendation, or we pile into these lists and say what standard actually applies here. We go through these line by line.
Well, the information is in the fact sheets as to what the standard is and what the data is that we believe justifies the determination of an impairment.
The implication, what's been plainly stated, is that we're required to use the latest data, and if that data shows that it's above and the latest standards, and if the data shows that it's over the standard, then where is our discretion? Can we say we don't believe it? You know, and on what basis do we not believe it? Not just the fact that it's old.
No, I think you can say that the data is statistically not valid. It's not representative.
And that's what these folks who have come tonight are
arguing. And that's what
arguing.
The contention is that they're putting forward, is that it represents other data that isn't representative of the watershed in general.
But we didn't see the kind of let's swap facts and take after each other on the facts kind of battle tonight that would allow us to make the decision you're talking about.
I would like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation after, kind of reluctantly, but after council's comments that I feel that it's just the right thing to do.
And I'll second it.
Mark, what you're saying is you move the staff's recommendation as amended. What B just said. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You can third it. But I wouldn't say I'm upset, but I think that to have raised this issue that we actually have the discretion to evaluate the data at this end of the discussion is really inappropriate, that we should have come into the whole thing if that was going to be our purview, and the whole staff analysis and presentation should have been very different if we were going to be required to do that kind of analysis. I've seconded the motion.
Madam Chairman, on the question, We're taking all of these and one lump sum to accept the exceptions that you get. I listened tonight with Alpine County and the others that made their pitch on the Carson. And it looked to me like they're working diligently to try to get everything up to date and move forward. And I can't vote for the whole package because I'm going to vote no on that one. I really believe that they need to go forward with what they're doing and get the scientific knowledge up to date on it. And I'd like to see that put on a watch list. And item number 4, and I'll vote for the whole thing.
Are there other comments to the motion?
Why don't we just have a vote, Madam Chair?
I think we have to.
I just have one question in terms of the added language with regards to reference to the U.S. waters. Is that in or out? I didn't hear you reference it.
I think it's out.
I would recommend it be out.
Yeah, I think I would recommend it be out.
That's part of the motion that was out. I was
okay. I didn't hear it referenced. I just wanted to make certain.
I assumed that it was out.
It's out. Okay.
You can
okay.
Yeah, I do. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
We have a motion, Mr. Clark, and seconded by Mr. Sandell. We just need a voice vote. Correct. All.
I think we have the motion.
We did. Okay. All in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries with one opposed, correct?
Okay. On the Carson.
Okay. Thank you. Item 6. An update of the Caltrans Lake Tahoe EIP Master Plan and Status Report, Caltrans Water Quality Improvement Program for Lake Tahoe.
And I'm going to ask Robert Ehrlich to lead this off, and then I know Caltrans has a presentation to follow.
Madam Chairman and members of the board, I'll be making some brief comments, and then I'll be introducing Caltrans, who will give a PowerPoint presentation. I'll provide a little bit of background information, particularly for the new board members. The regional board had been concerned about Caltrans' progress in constructing water quality improvement projects to treat runoff from their highways in Lake Tahoe. On January 12, 2000, the regional board adopted a time schedule order which required Caltrans to submit a master plan by June 30, 2000. In the summer of 2000, Caltrans was working with us and actually made a board presentation on their progress in developing the master plan. And on October 12, 2000, the regional board rescinded the time schedule order after submittal of a revised master plan. I want to point out an error on our green sheet. I did have the date October 12, 2002 at the bottom of that time table there, and it should be October 12, 2000. California Department of Transportation District 3 operates the state and federal highway systems here in the Lake Tahoe Basin. Previous or historic regional board orders and the current state Caltrans board order 9906 DWQ requires Caltrans to bring their roads in the Tahoe Basin into compliance with the applicable water quality standards set forth in our basin plan. The compliance date for that is 2008. Caltrans, in developing their master plan, tried also to address the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's environmental improvement project program list, and they did submit a master plan in 2000 that fully complied with our requirements, and we rescinded it. Since then, Caltrans has been working on the design of projects and has recently submitted plans for 2 environmental improvement program projects in the master plan. For construction, one's on Highway 50 in Myers, the other one's Highway 50 in the city of South Lake Tahoe. In addition, Caltrans has really been beefing up their monitoring efforts in the basin and is fully participating in interagency groups on monitoring. They've installed 3 stormwater characterization monitoring stations in the basin in fall 2000 on Highway 50, and they installed 3 additional ones just this fall up at the North Shore. Caltrans has also started to install bench-scale pilot studies of new treatment methods, which may be used on Caltrans projects as soon as 2002 or 2003 as a full-scale pilot study. The master plan indicated that Caltrans would provide an annual master plan update to the regional board, and I'd like to introduce Dick Mellum, who's the Deputy District Director for the Lake Tahoe Basin from Caltrans District 3, to provide this annual update.